The beast awoke from its long, dreamless slumber. Sounds, distantly familiar, started the neurons firing in its prehistoric brain. Its coal-black eyes opened for the first time in decades. The near death of its imprisonment ended with noise and shuddering and the scent of nourishment. Meat, redolent with decay and chemicals, sank slowly in the deep, cold water. The beast's stomach fired up like an old truck engine. It was hungry. Food, precious, long ago forgotten food, was so close. With a swish of its tail fin, longer and wider than a sail, the beast plunged into the cage, nose slamming into coral-encrusted steel. The cage groaned, but held steady. It watched the food sink deeper and deeper until it was out of sight, but never too far to smell. Ravenous, driven mad by hunger now that his prolonged hibernation had been broken, the beast battered the cage again and again. For wasn't this what it had been designed and trained to do? It was an aquatic Pavlovian creation of fury and hunger. Not that it knew or would ever care about Pavlov. Eat. That's what it needed to do right now. With one last burst, the beast crumpled the front of the cage. Iron bars bent like sticks of licorice. It was free. Diving toward its food, the beast opened its mouth wide, eagerly awaiting the pungent meat that had brought it to life so long ago. Interlude, 1951. It was confirmed. Dr. Brand had died of radiation exposure. This was a shock to no one. The man took chances, was so engrossed in his work that he wouldn't stop. And the powers that be were only too happy to let him continue. Just another casualty in the pursuit of the future. Dr. Lawton closed the file folder containing Brand's autopsy results and dropped it on his desk.
He can still be of value to the project.
The words made him jump. He didn't know the oily German scientist was even in the room, much less right behind him. Dr. Lawton whirled round to face him, jaws clenched in fury.
You may not touch him!
Dr. Muller merely smiled.
It was only a suggestion, considering the good doctor's dedication to what we are trying to accomplish.
I'm sure that was perfectly normal for you in the war, but here, now, we call it barbarism.
Is it barbarism when we do the same with my former countrymen?
Dr. Lawton flashed a wicked grin.
No, that's called justice. And don't play a national pride card with me. I know full well you pledge allegiance to nothing other than that thing.
They all agreed that Muller was a mad genius. Not the raving lunatic that was depicted in movies. No, his calm, measured demeanor was the perfect smokescreen for the insanity that boiled within him. There was no doubting his brilliance. Working for the Nazis, the scientist had brought an extinct species of fish, a fish presumed to have been deceased for millions of years, back to life. The discovery of the coelacanth, a fish that could grow to 6 feet in length, had taken the oceanographic world by storm. Perhaps the world of marine biology had been wrong, and the fish, though elusive, had never gone extinct. Only Dr. Muller and his associates knew the truth. The coelacanth was just his first success, a remarkable achievement, resurrection of the dead from mere fossilized cells. Even working on the project, Dr. Lawton wasn't entirely sure of how it was done. Everything was on a need-to-know basis, each scientist assigned to do their part. Only Dr. Muller knew how to put all the pieces together. What they had hatched here was no coelacanth. Dr. Muller's fingers stroked his goatee. He seemed completely unfazed by Lawton's show of anger and repulsion. The cold bastard.
That thing will change the world one day, and you should be appreciative that the change will be for the good of you and your country.
Only because our side won.
Dr. Muller shrugged.
Science, great science, knows nothing about race, creed, or color. I actually came to let you know that we're going to do a test run with the creature in 1 hour. We have several ships at the ready. Care to join us?
Dr. Lawton turned his back on Muller, whirled around, and punched the smug German scientist. The blow staggered Mueller, but didn't drop him. Leaning against his desk, the man pulled a handkerchief from his back pocket and dabbed the drop of blood from the corner of his lip. He said nothing to Lawton. The man simply smiled, then went back to his work as if nothing had happened. Storming out of the room, Lawton slammed the door. He was getting very unprofessional, but it couldn't be helped. This lab was driving him crazy. The project itself frightened him, and he missed home more and more each day. The doctor was beginning to wonder if any of them would ever be allowed home. Not after what they had seen, what they had done. He looked at the list of names on the clipboard by the door. 20 in all. 20 Nazi war criminals that had been sequestered in secret prisons around the world since 1945. The Allies had captured many more than they let the public know, keeping them hidden from view these past 6 years. Allowing those monsters the dignity of a trial was out of the question. Their guilt was unquestionable. The last thing they wanted to do was give these men a public forum to spew more hate or try to beguile the world that they were, in fact, innocent. The initial plan was to let them rot, closed off from civilization until they died from neglect, disease, or their own hands. Oddly enough, it was Dr. Mueller who had proposed emptying some of those prisons for the experiment. The Nazis were transported to small islands, chained so they couldn't escape. These islands would be close to nuclear tests, the prisoners becoming heavily dosed with radiation. They were then retrieved by specially protected teams and brought back here. Dr. Mueller had not only brought a megalodon back from extinction, he had also devised the special formula that gave life to the beast. The ancient shark was a meat eater, but it was so large it would quickly destroy the nearby ecosystem in its quest for food. So it had been altered to respond to a particular type of nourishment, the irradiated bodies of the Nazi war criminals that had been injected with Dr. Mueller's special serum. Again, the ingredients of the serum were known only to Mueller. Lawton had tried several times to gain access to the Nazis' notes, but so far he'd been unsuccessful. Whatever it was, it did horrible things to the men who were infused and prepared for the megalodon. Their flesh blackened, became spongy and foul-smelling. They looked as if they'd been dipped in hot tar, their cries short-lived as it burned out their vocal cords. The radiation, in combination with the chemical cocktail, was like a shot of adrenaline to the creature. And like adrenaline, it would wear off, the megalodon returning to a deep slumber akin to hibernation. Once subdued, it would be transported via submarine back into its specially designed cage under the lab. It was as ingenious as it was foul. What would they do when they ran out of Nazis? Dr. Lawton knew that Mueller wanted to use the Marshallese that had been accidentally irradiated, but so far, he'd been denied. But if the creature kept growing, and there were more and more successful tests, he knew it was only a matter of time until they gave Dr. Mueller permission to do whatever he had to do to feed the beast. That megalodon was going to make America an unparalleled superpower. At what cost? Dr. Lawton thought, shuffling into the hallway. At what cost? Ollie was hit by the geyser of water square in the face. Again, his filter mask was spun sideways. The water stung his eyes, wormed into his mouth and nose. He gagged, the salty tang of the ocean and his own bile burning his throat. He lost his footing, arms pinwheeling, searching for anything to grab onto. The slick catwalk had become an ice rink. His feet glided on the slippery metal grating. He spun around, his ribs smacking the rail. His momentum carried him over, and he was facing the long drop down. He tried to scream, but his lungs were too full of water. The next moment, he was in freefall. Another explosion of water erupted from the cylinder, slamming him in the back as he slipped and fell over the side of the platform. There was a sharp tug. He vomited air and seawater. His descent stopped abruptly as he swung hard into the side of the cylinder. In that brief moment of contact, he swore he could feel something enormous moving around inside it. Swinging, he spied the rungs of the ladder not far to his right. He reached out with wet hands, his fingertips grazing the metal bar. Damn it! Keep trying. There was a heavy thud and more water splashed out. He swung through the curtain of water, which spun him around. He closed his eyes, trying to fight off the dizziness and creeping fear that he was going to die up here, dangling in an abandoned military lab. That would be just my luck. Win all this money, get things just the way I want them, and fucking die. He hoped Tara was okay. As he tried and missed his next attempt to grab the ladder, he rethought that. I hope they're all okay. The rope jerked several feet downward as the railing he'd attached it to gave way. He had to get on that ladder. It sounded like something was trying to break its way out of the cylinder. A spider web of cracks broke out on the surface, chunks of concrete crumbling down. Ollie found his voice.
Heads up! This thing is falling apart!
He couldn't hear any replies over the rush of the water and terrifying thumps. Swinging lower, knowing the metal bar was going to give way any second now, Ollie steeled himself for a last desperate attempt to latch onto the ladder. Water pounded the back of his head, the helmet absorbing most of the blow. It still made him see stars.
Almost.
Three fingers of his left hand touched metal. They curled around it as best they could, his body weight threatening to break his tenuous grasp. Before he lost it altogether, he lunged forward, grabbing another rung with his right hand. It hurt like hell to stop his swinging, his shoulders threatening to pop from their sockets. But it worked. He pressed his body flat against the quaking cylinder, holding onto the ladder for dear life. His feet found lower rungs. His body quaked from exhaustion, fear, and the rush of adrenaline. Fumbling for the knife in his pack, he pulled out the blade and cut the rope. He had to take a few deep breaths before attempting to climb back down.
I'm coming down!
We're here!
Ollie scrabbled down as quickly as he could, praying that no one was hurt. The floor of the lab was covered in half a foot of water.
Okay, we got him. Grab his leg.
Lenny, Marco, and Tara were there to peel him off the ladder.
You all okay?
Oh, define okay. Alive is good enough for now. You all right to walk?
I'm ready to run.
Even better. Come on.
The four of them sprinted around the cylinder, water sloshing up to their calves, bits of concrete facade splintering and plinking off their helmets. They made it to the doorway. Lenny slammed it shut behind them. Marco ran smack into a chair, Lenny into the edge of a desk. Ollie and Tara grabbed hold of their arms and kept them moving forward. They exploded from the lab into the gray light. Steven and Heidi were waiting for them, practically catching them as they stumbled out, breathless and soaked to the skin. Tara lay on her back, staring at the slate gray sky.
What the fuck was that?
Lenny was on his hands and knees, coughing out the last remnants of seawater. Marco sat with a leg pulled up to his chest. Tara spied a gash in his jeans and a steady stream of blood. Ollie paced outside the lab door while Steven hugged Heidi, who had calmed considerably.
It must be whatever storm's cooking out there.
He thought he spied a few sharks patrolling the surface 50 yards out.
The water is rushing into that tank, for lack of a better word. I guess it's a little too old for something like that. We're either lucky for getting out unhurt or very unlucky for choosing this moment to traipse on in there.
Marco hissed as he pulled the fabric from the jagged wound in his leg.
Unhurt? Yeah, speak for yourself.
Is unhurt even a word?
Shh. Tara had watched Ollie's body slam against the cylinder again and again. He'd have some gnarly bruises by tonight. Lenny was back on his feet, staring at the lab.
I don't know. Everything was fine until Ollie hit that button. Did you see what came out of the chute?
Ollie shook his head, water dripping off his ears and nose.
It was too dark. It stunk to high heaven, though.
What happened after we left?
Heidi knelt by Marco, examining his wound.
I'll tell you later, over a good, strong drink. Let's get back and take care of Marco's cut. You okay to walk?
Yeah, it looks worse than it is.
They trudged back to the soundtrack of an angry sea. But still, there was no rain, just a stiff, warm breeze. Tara walked beside Lenny, who seemed deep in thought.
Bet you never had a little adventure like that.
Her thighs quivered as she walked, a cloak of exhaustion draping over her.
That was definitely unique. I went to this abandoned hospital once in West Virginia. It had closed down in the 70s. The place was huge, but falling apart. I actually fell through the floor. Luckily, I landed on my feet and the floor below held steady. I laugh about it now, but I was scared shitless at the time.
Any idea what went on in there?
Ollie was just ahead of them. Tara could make out the blossoming of a deep purple bruise on the back of his left arm. She wondered if there was any Epsom salts on the island. A good hot soak and some Motrin would be a big help. Ollie was going to be in a world of hurt later. She'd have to make sure he took care of himself. After all, he'd done all of this to take care of them. Lenny ran his hand through his wet hair.
I just can't buy that was water rushing inside the cylinder. I thought I heard something else. And that chute. What came out of it?
Maybe Ollie took some pictures that will explain things.
I know this sounds crazy, but I keep thinking of feeding time at an aquarium. What if that chute was filled with some kind of food? It's probably been sitting there for decades, rotting away, which explains the stench.
Tara shivered.
Yeah, but what answered the dinner bell?
I wish I knew.
Well, let's make it a point not to do that again.
The moment they stepped into their new island home, Heidi kicked off her sneakers and stripped off all of her clothes in the foyer. She turned to her husband.
And before you get any ideas, I have to steam everything off me. God knows what was in that water.
Stephen went right to the tile counter between the kitchen and dining room and poured a glass of scotch. They'd left Marco and Ollie with Tara, who was taking care of their wounds at Ollie's house. Lenny apologized profusely, everyone accepting his apology, saying there was no way he could know what would happen. As Heidi slipped under the shower, she couldn't help blaming Lenny. She didn't know him all that well. He seemed like a decent guy, if not a little sophomoric at times. In her mind, he did know it could be dangerous, which is why he made them take all that safety gear. What the hell were they doing in there anyway? Getting your kicks from breaking into deserted buildings was teenager stupidity, as far as she was concerned. Just because they gave it a name, urban exploration, and made it a forbidden passion for adults, didn't make the whole thing any brighter. Stephen knocked on the door.
You want a drink?
Some wine would be nice.
Gotcha. It'll be waiting for you.
Hey, I want you to take a shower too. That place was vile. And don't sit on anything, especially the bed.
Stephen was silent.
Yeah, sure. I can always help dry you off.
She knew what that would lead to, and she was so not in the mood. He couldn't see her grin.
Not now.
Well, I think this can count as a brush with death. Only way to celebrate surviving a brush with death is by celebrating the act that can bring new life into the world.
She shut the water off and froze. Was he saying he wanted to have a baby? Here? On the island with no doctors?
Come again?
He opened the door and was hit with a face full of steam.
I meant practice, not actually a new life. Lots and lots of practice.
He held out a glass of chilled white wine for her. Naked and dripping, she drank it down in one gulp. She looked down at the bulge in his shorts. He was definitely ready to celebrate life. They had been here 2 nights and hadn't christened the house yet. The wine smoothed the rough edges of her agitated nerves.
Take a shower first.
He got out of his clothes faster than a pit crew at the Indianapolis 500. He gave her a long kiss, his hardness pressed against her belly.
I love you.
Love you too.
Ollie ached in places he didn't even know existed. He'd woken up so stiff, it hurt to yawn. After a scalding hot shower, he'd lumbered over to Marco's. His friend was on the phone in his office, surrounded by blueprints and dozens of bound documents. When he'd seen Ollie outside the sliding glass doors, Marco had hung up the phone and ushered him inside.
How you feeling?
He was fixing up a pot of coffee.
Like I was in a mosh pit with a herd of elephants. How's the leg?
Marco wore shorts. His thigh was wrapped in gauze, courtesy of Tara's excellent first aid attentions.
It throbs a little, but I'm pretty sure it won't lose it.
Ollie winced when he sat.
That's too bad. Having a peg leg is right in line with the theme of living on a remote island in the high seas.
Marco handed him a warm mug.
I'll settle for a parrot and an earring.
The coffee was so hot, Ollie had to suck in cool air, which made it feel like tiny daggers were stabbing his ribs.
So, any idea what the hell happened yesterday?
Marco slumped into his leather office chair. He looked up at the ceiling as if seeking answers from on high.
I don't have a clue, bro. I mean, that was the most freaked out I've been in, shit, ever.
Something was in there. I couldn't see it, but I felt it moving around.
Well, the surf was coming in pretty hard on the beach. The ocean? There's one powerful mad bitch.
I know, but here's the thing. The ocean has a rhythm to it. Whatever was inside that tank had no rhythm. It was almost manic, like it knew I was on the other side, and it wanted to get at me.
Hey, but you know how crazy that sounds?
Marco looked down at his phone, scrolling through a message, his brows knit.
I don't care. I know what I felt. And there was something else that bothered me.
What's that?
He put the phone face down on top of a stack of paper.
The front door to the lab was open. Who the hell was in there before us?
What does it matter?
Marco gnawed at the pink tip of his thumb. It looked painful as hell. Ollie rubbed the back of his neck, massaging a kink that was pressing on a nerve.
I don't know. It just does.
Look, this place, it's been empty for a long, long time. I mean, God knows what went on here. I wouldn't be surprised if there are people buried around the island. What better way to dispose of a body than some deserted rock in the ocean?
If it wouldn't hurt so much, Ollie would have laughed.
You can take the man out of Jersey, but never Jersey out of the man. Always thinking like a mobster.
That's what they call buried treasure out here.
Ollie put his coffee down and was overcome with the memory of the stench of whatever had come spilling out of that chute. He must have made a face because...
Oh, if you smell a fart, it's your own.
I'm going to be haunted by the stink of that stuff that splashed into the water for the rest of my life. Seriously. I think it's taken root in the membranes of my nose.
And that's exactly when things went crazy, Ollie thought. Cause and effect were just coincidence. He counted 12 taps on the side of his mug with his index finger, then cursed, making himself stop.
Whatever it was, it's been festering in there since the 50s. Even if it was flowers, I mean, they'd reek by now.
He turned around to check something on his computer. Playtime was over. The past couple of days had been fun, but there was still work to be done. And the financial side of things would be a constant. Ollie felt bad about laying this burden on his friend. He had to remind himself that Marco was being handsomely rewarded for his efforts. It just felt weird having anyone working for him. He even felt guilty when the construction crew was out hammering away under the sun, or when Lee cooked his meals, or cleaned his house.
Definitely wasn't flowers. More like what I imagined Chum would be like.
Well, if it was Chum, I mean, that would make sense, out here in the land of sharks.
But why the hell would the military build a tank that tall that leads directly to the ocean underneath it?
Knowing that also kept him up last night worrying about the structural integrity of the entire area around the decaying lab. Images of everything plunging into the ocean kept running through his head, the sinkhole marching outward, heading toward them like an unstoppable, unquenchable beast.
You'd have to ask them. God only knows what was going on at the time. It was the Cold War, and both sides kind of lost their minds for a while. Like 3 decades worth of insanity.
Marco scrolled through what looked like lines of debits and credits on his laptop screen. Always the multitasker. Ollie finished his coffee.
I just hope it wasn't some underwater nuclear observation shit. We could be living on top of a cancer hotspot.
Now Marco turned to face him.
We already covered that when we had those special inspectors come out months ago. All background radiation is normal. Bombs were never detonated here.
Feeling like his own grandpa, Ollie got out of the chair.
I guess that's some consolation.
That's a lot of consolation, if you ask me. Oh, hey, I emailed the demolition team this morning to see if they could speed up the timetable to take the lab down. There's no sense keeping it around.
Ollie stared out the window at the clear blue sky kissing the aqua ocean. He was living in Eden, just 50 yards away from Tara and his friends. He had to shake yesterday off and enjoy every moment.
Good. I can't wait to watch that thing get wiped off my island.
2 houses away, Lenny paced in his kitchen. Yesterday had been a major clusterfuck. They were lucky no one had gotten killed, especially Ollie. Poor guy had really taken it on the chin not once, but twice. The main attraction of urban exploration was uncovering mysteries, revealing forgotten pasts, stepping back in time, and trying to piece that world back together. What had transpired in the lab was no ghost from the U.S. military past. Whatever Ollie had done up on that catwalk had woken something up. But what?
Was everything all right, Mr. Lenny?
He didn't even hear Lee come in the open patio door. She blew in with the island breeze, a slim, middle-aged woman with short, jet-black hair, tawny skin, and a smile that could be substituted for a ship's beacon. She'd brought him breakfast and coffee a half hour ago. Lenny had barely touched it.
It was fine. I'm sorry. I'm just not hungry.
Do you want me to save it?
She asked in perfect English. He'd studied up on the Marshall Islands before he came here and was happy to learn that most people spoke fluent English. At least he wouldn't be the dumb American stumbling his way through conversations with the locals. Then again, Lee and so many others spoke at least 2 languages. So, yeah, he was the dumb American.
That would be great. Thanks. Lee, can I ask you a question?
Of course.
You know that old military lab on the end of the island?
She cleaned up his counter with a paper towel.
Oh, yes. I see it every day from my boat.
What do you know about it?
I don't understand.
Lenny chose his words carefully.
I mean, you and your family have lived on the next island over for a long time, right?
Oh, yes. A very long time.
Did anyone ever talk about what went on here after the war?
Her smile faltered for the briefest of moments.
No. The Japanese had relocated anyone who lived on the island in the 30s. More than 1,000 Japanese then moved in. When the United States took over, naturally the Japanese were removed and the island was closed off. We don't know what they did. We are just grateful they didn't set off any bombs.
She made a quick sign of the cross.
Thanks.
Lenny cleaned his glasses with the end of his shirt before Lee left.
You should stay away from there.
Why is that?
All militaries do bad things when people can't see. Not just Americans. Leave the bad be. There's so much else to enjoy.
She left as quietly and quickly as she'd arrived. Leave the bad be. Lenny changed into less comfortable clothes and left the house. No, that just wasn't his style. Lenny tried to get Steven to go back to the lab with him, but the mere thought of telling Heidi left the big man jittery and flushed.
No, she'll kill me and you if she found out.
Steven looked behind him to make sure she wasn't close enough to listen. The island was too small to keep a secret.
You're really that whipped?
Spoken like a true single man. Besides, why the hell would you want to go back out there?
I want to look inside that tank or whatever it is.
You saw how well that worked out for Ollie.
We won't be going back there as blind as we were before.
No. Count me out. I'm too pretty to die.
Lenny rolled his eyes.
What? They don't have mirrors in your house, Coots?
Why am I standing here talking to a crazy person when I could be swimming or getting my tan on?
And that was that. Tara looked for a moment like she was game, but then she thought of Ollie and Marco and wanted to check in on them.
They were both busy doing island construction stuff today. Lenny, promise me you won't go there alone. After everything that happened, it might be ready to collapse.
It touches me that you care, T-Mac.
As a former veterinary assistant, it looks like I'm the sole medical expert on this island. I don't want to have to pull your ass from the wreckage.
Come on. Not even if it meant a little mouth-to-mouth.
Been there, done that. Got over it with therapy.
For a second, he thought she was serious. Then she smiled.
Now, go put on your bathing suit and meet me at the beach later. I have a strong desire for sun and cocktails.
Sun and cocktails. Nope, it was darkness and whatever was lurking in that tank for him. He felt bad lying to Tara, but maybe he'd be in and out so quick she wouldn't even realize he'd gone. His house was on the end of the oval, so no one saw him walk out his back door in full exploration gear. It was a truly stunning day. Yesterday's gray cold front had knocked a few degrees off the thermometer, and a cloud couldn't be seen for miles. He didn't feel bad about wasting the day in the old lab, because there would be more sunny days than he could count in his future. Lenny had always had a stubborn streak as wide and deep as the ocean itself. He questioned things to the point of annoyance for those on the opposite end of his endless queries. The Omega Lab left him with too many questions to be able to sit back and relax. He had to see for himself, and he hoped there might be some documents left behind in the military's mad dash to leave Grand Isla Tiburon. He walked along the beach, comforted by the sound of the lapping surf. It was tempting to just take a fast dip with his clothes on. He knew if he did, he'd end up staying in the water. Climbing the dune, he came upon the ugly lab complex. From the outside, it looked as if nothing had happened just 24 hours ago. Dozens of birds were perched on the roof. They stared down at him as he made his way to the front. The door was closed, but unlocked. Just like Tara did yesterday, he kept it open with a heavy rock. He did the same with the next door until he got to the heart of the lab. Alone in the dark, the lab was downright eerie. Much of the cement on the cylinder had crumbled off, revealing the drab metal work underneath. The water hadn't completely drained off. It was up to his ankles and cold. Taking a deep breath, he grabbed hold of the ladder on the side of the tank and tugged on it. It seemed sturdy.
It did yesterday, too.
The sound of even his voice was comforting. He made the climb up to the catwalk as quickly as possible, avoiding the section that was mangled when Ollie almost took a nosedive. He'd brought the most powerful flashlight he had, along with a few flares. Striking one of the flares to life, he tossed it down the catwalk. The bright orange flames illuminated the observation deck. There wasn't much to see. Were there computers back then? Sure there were, but they were the size of tractor trailers. There wouldn't have been room for any up here. No, this was strictly an area built to observe whatever was down in the cylinder. Lenny lit another flare and tossed it into the tank. He saw undulating water and nothing more. Sweeping his flashlight around, he spotted a wide beam with a metal box and big red button. Above it was the open flap of the chute Ollie had accidentally opened. A breath of wind spiraled up from the cylinder, whispering past the chute and toward Lenny. It brought with it the horrendous stench Ollie had spoken about. Lenny instinctively pinched his nose and closed and expelled the foul vapor from his mouth. He hesitated to inhale until he was sure the breeze had passed.
What the hell was in there?
Reluctantly, he stepped toward the chute's opening, daring himself to plumb its depths with the flashlight. The sloping metal was stained with rust or something. He thought of slanted autopsy tables, putrid fluids pulled by gravity to the opening at the end. What did they do with body fluids? Did they cremate them? Toss them down the drain? He'd have to remember to look that up later. The smell was so bad now it made him dizzy. He was going to puke. Bent at the waist, his muscles locking as he retched, his flashlight's beam focused on an object so unexpected, so out of place. He screamed between bouts of vomit. Ollie was talking to two guys who were going to start painting the interior of the rec center when Tara came by, wearing a white cover-up that did little to hide the black bikini underneath.
Call me if you need me.
He said this to the men, anxious to be alone with Tara.
How are you feeling today?
The handle of her wicker bag was looped over her shoulder, a water bottle poking out of the top.
I've been worse.
He didn't want to let on just how sore he was.
I'm sure you've been better.
With all of you here in this amazing place, I doubt that.
Her smile made his knees weak.
Getting sappy in your old age.
Since we're the same age, I'm sure you'll agree, we're far from old.
She peeked into the open door of the rec center.
What's going on?
They're painting the game room today. Some other guys are coming in to lay down the carpet in the theater. We want to get this done fast before you all get bored.
She patted his shoulder. He hoped she didn't see the pain flash across his eyes.
After yesterday, I could use a little boredom. I'm gonna plant my ass in the sand. You have time to hang out?
I'm the boss. I can make time.
He gave an awkward smile.
Stop being so damn doofy.
She turned toward the beach.
Walk with me. Talk with me.
He followed her like a puppy dog. God, he was being so transparent and awkward. It was like college all over again. They spotted Heidi and Steven in lounge chairs by the water's edge. Tara waved.
We should probably give them their space.
Yeah, I think we need to throttle back and ease Heidi in a little easier. It's like introducing a new cat to the house.
Be nice.
I'm always nice.
Tara stopped and looked at him over her sunglasses.
Well, now I am.
We both are.
Of course, on Grand Isle of Tiburon, it was easy not to fly off the handle because he wasn't being made fun of or surrounded by assholes.
You know, I haven't been in the water yet.
She pulled her cover up over her head and tossed it in the sand.
Time to rectify that.
She flipped her sunglasses to him and made a beeline for the water. Ollie caught himself staring at her with his mouth wide open. So had Steven, who grinned like a lunatic at him.
Come on! It's so warm! Oh my God, it's perfect.
I'm not wearing my suit.
Treading water, she looked around.
Is there a rule about proper bathing attire I can't see?
He also wasn't wearing any underwear, so stripping off his shorts was out of the question. He didn't want to take his shirt off and have her see his full body bruises. That would kill the mood, if there was a mood, for sure. Ollie kicked off his sandals. The water wasn't warm, but it wasn't freezing like the lakes back home.
Hope you don't have anything important in those pockets.
She said this as he paddled out to her. Swimming had never been his strong suit, but he planned to rectify that.
Like Lenny's head, they're empty.
Tara floated on her back, eyes closed, bobbing on the water like driftwood. Beautiful driftwood.
Hey, make sure I don't float too far out. I don't want to get eaten by sharks. Not yet, at least.
He was tempted to hook his finger around hers to keep her tethered to him. You big chicken, he mocked himself. Just go for it. As he reached out his hand, he spotted something breaking the surface of the ocean. Not just something. Lots of somethings.
What the hell is that?
Tara didn't hear him. Dozens of plumes of water spewed into the air as sleek gray shapes came rushing toward them like tennis balls rolling down a hill. Now, he grabbed Tara's hand.
Tara, We gotta get back on the beach.
What? How come?
She followed his gaze and froze.
Are those sharks?
No, I think they're dolphins.
There's so many of them.
Yeah, and they're coming right at us. We're going to get smashed if we don't get the hell out of their way. Come on!
Tara cleaved through the water with the grace of one of the fast-approaching dolphins. Ollie struggled to keep up, his legs and arms suddenly feeling as if they were weighted down with anchors. He saw Heidi standing now, pointing. He could feel the concussion of the dolphins' bodies as they broke the surface and smashed back under, getting closer with each passing second. Frantically dog paddling, he didn't even realize he was in shallow water until Tara reached down to help him up.
Look at them.
Her eyes were glued to the onrushing spectacle. Now that they were safely out of the way, it was a pretty amazing sight. There had to be at least 30 of them, the sun glinting off their slick bodies.
Good thing I saw them. I don't think they're used to humans being in their way.
I don't think that's it. It looks like they're running from something.
Maybe there's a killer whale out there. They eat dolphins, right?
Land animals are my specialty, but I think they prefer seals and penguins. A dolphin might be too big for them.
It's amazing.
Ollie didn't even notice her and Steven coming up to them. They stood in the water up to their ankles, shielding their eyes as the dolphins made a steady march toward land.
They have to turn around any second now. Dolphins don't beach themselves.
But there was no sign of them slowing down.
Something has them spooked.
She ran back to her bag and grabbed her phone, snapping picture after picture before changing to video. Steven turned to Ollie.
You've been here a while. You ever see anything like it before?
Not even a little.
Without realizing it, they had all backed out of the water. It seemed as if the pod of dolphins wasn't going to stop until they made land. They were so close now, Ollie heard their bodies splash as they popped in and out of the water in their oceanic stampede. Movie clips from Jaws, Shark Night, Sharknado, Deep Blue Sea, and even Flipper ran through his mind. He could never help to compare real life to real life. God help them if this was anything like what was depicted in those movies.
What do we do with it?
A dorsal fin the size of a Cadillac crashed to the surface. It was just a few feet behind the dolphins at the rear.
Holy shit! Look at the size of that thing!
Ah!
Heidi ran farther onto the safety of the beach. Now we know what's got them so freaked out, Ollie thought. But if that's a shark, it's the biggest damn shark I've ever seen.
What the heck can it be, Tara?
Ollie unconsciously made fists as if he could punch his way out of the situation. She kept her camera trained on the runaway nightmare.
It's some kind of shark, I think. But it's way too big.
The dorsal fin was nothing compared to the wide open maw that burst from the depths, swallowing two of the dolphins. Its massive teeth chomped down, obliterating the majestic creatures to ribbons of pink and gray flesh. The rest of the dolphins changed direction, heading east now, away from the beach. The shark, because that's what it had to be, slipped back under the water. Within seconds, it was over, the water returning to normal as if nothing had happened. There wasn't even blood visible to mark the spot where the dolphins had been mercilessly consumed. Marco touched the bandage on his leg and hissed as a tiny electric shock went straight to his balls. He wanted to see what was going on under there, but Tara threatened him with violence if he so much as touched the bandage before she came over to check it later today. Part of her was the same girl he remembered from college, but something about her had changed. He couldn't put his finger on it. He didn't have time to contemplate the new Tara. Being in the lab yesterday had set his nerves on edge, and it had nothing to do with what happened by the tank. Marco was sure he had held his breath from the moment they opened the unlocked door until they ran from the damn building. His stomach cramped from the ulcer he was sure had settled in for the duration. Take your mind off it, he thought. Looking at his email inbox, he felt a burning need for a drink. He limped to his liquor cabinet and plucked a bottle of vodka, filling a glass with ice. The clear liquid burned. It was exactly what he needed. Looking out his bay window, He saw Titus Lohman, the foreman for the small crew working on the rec center's interior, walking by carrying cans of paint. Marco waved. Titus, always grim-faced but genial enough to talk to, gave a head nod. He never realized how big this undertaking was going to be. It would only have been worse if they were doing it in the States. It was simpler here, on Grand Isle Tiburon, but it was still a freaking headache and a half. He couldn't wait until everything was done. He planned to spend 1 year shadowboxing his liver and staring into space, and see where things went from there. Tired. The past 5 years had worn him down to the nub. Ollie's windfall and unbelievable offer came just in time. It would be the fourth anniversary of his girlfriend Maisie's death. A car had sideswiped her on the Jersey Turnpike exit 11 off-ramp. Her car flipped over the guardrail, landing on its hood. The medical examiner said she died instantly. Maisie was one of those rare people who had everything they needed to take life by the balls, but was still humble and self-deprecating. And she was so smart. Believe it or not, that was what attracted her to Marco most. He'd already gone on the Hot Bimbo tour. That grew tired fast. No, Maisie was different from any woman he'd ever met. His parents and friends constantly urged him to put a ring on it before he lost the greatest thing that would ever happen to him. When Maisie died, his whole world shattered. His grief nearly broke him, because it was laden with a guilt so crushing he hadn't dared speak of it to anyone. Only Ariana, Maisie's best friend, knew where he was when he got the call. In Ariana's bed. Marco filled the glass with more vodka, willing the memory to cower back in the dark corner of his mind. Ariana killed herself a week after Maisie's funeral, so at least he didn't have to worry about their awful secret coming out. His initial relief made things even worse. He felt responsible for both their deaths. If he hadn't been with Ariana, fate wouldn't have seen the need to teach him a lesson. And if Ariana hadn't fallen into bed with him, after four white Russians, she'd still be alive. Everything just went to shit from there. Marco reveled in self-abuse, setting his sights on a true rock bottom. The bottom of a grave. He fell into a new circle of friends. Well, actually, scumbags of the highest order, hoping they'd do the job for him sooner rather than later. Frantic banging at his door pulled him from his trip down bad memory lane. He made sure to dump his vodka in the sink and hide the glass in a cabinet before opening it. He didn't want anyone to know that hard liquor before 10 in the morning was a thing for him. Lenny stood on his doorstep. He looked like he'd come face to face with a serial killer.
Marco, where is everybody?
Lenny, what the hell?
He was dressed in the same clothes he wore yesterday to go in the lab. That damn lab.
Ollie's not here?
I think he's at the beach with everyone.
Get them.
Lenny put his bag on the couch.
You have anything to drink?
Sure, there's water and juice in the fridge.
To his surprise, Lenny took out two bottles of Sapporo beer. The Sapporos were not twist-offs.
Jesus, you stink.
Lenny didn't even respond to the insult. He stared at his hands.
Still burns.
Pouring nearly an entire bottle of dishwashing liquid on his hands, he rubbed them feverishly under the running water.
When he was done, he dried his hands on the curtain above the sink. I thought I got it all off in the ocean.
Marco was too taken aback to ask what the hell he was talking about. Lenny collapsed next to his bag. A wet bag, Marco noticed, staining the pristine white cushion. Before he could snap at Lenny to take it off the couch, he saw the wild expression in his friend's eyes and thought better of it.
I just need to sit for a bit and catch my breath.
Bro, what happened?
Lenny took a long drink.
I'll tell you all when everyone's here. Oh, and ask Tara to bring that ledger with her.
What ledger?
The one she took from the lab.
Okay, so Lenny had been at the lab. What the hell had happened this time? Oh, God. He hoped it wasn't...
Lenny, what did you see in the lab?
His lips were attached to the bottle. He shook his head.
I need everyone now, man.
Before he left, Marco turned off his computer. His leg ached like hell as he trudged through the sand. As luck would have it, he didn't have to walk far. Ollie, Tara, Stephen, and Heidi were running toward him. At some point during their sprint from the beach, Tara's hand had slipped within Ollie's grasp. He only realized it now because she was squeezing him so hard. His knuckles were grinding against one another. Marco waved them over, looking relieved to see them.
You won't believe what we saw.
Lenny's in my house, totally freaked out about something that happened in the lab.
In the lab? We were with him.
Marco shook his head.
He went back there this morning. He's on my couch drilling beers. He wanted me to come get all of you to show you something.
Tara showed him her phone.
Wait until you see what we have to show you guys.